Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, May 16th. Rookie mini camps are underway across the NFL. So you've got beautiful highlights coming out of that. That's amazing to see. And while we've done a dynasty rookie mock draft, we know you just can't get enough fantasy takes on this rookie class. I can't get enough of talking about it. It's a fun class to talk about, especially, you know, the potential it could potentially bring this year down the road, all that. With all that in mind, I could think of no one better to talk about and try to rank some of the best fits and maybe even some of the worst fits for this rookie class than the author, the creator, the man, the legend himself, the creator of the rookie scouting portfolio, Matt Waldman. Waldman, what's going on? It's been way too long. Thank you for joining me on the pod today.
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And, you know, it's always great to be able to chop it up with you. So I'm looking forward to this.
So obviously, I've read the RSP a little bit, and before we kind of get into the rankings here, you know, it's incredible work that people should check out every single year. I mean, it's the amount of detail that goes into it. It even makes me blush, bro. You know, and I'm doing all this work on one position, and you're all dived in on all of these offensive skill position players. But before we get into sort of the fits that we're going to get into here. And I don't know if you're like me, I love the post-draft analysis. And I know that there's a post-draft part of the RSP as well, which I think is great. I love the post-draft because like ranking these guys and trying to fit them within the actual offense they're going to play in is so much better than the hypothetical that we get before the draft. But just kind of wanted to get your grand view take on this draft class as a whole. Like, was it a good class? Are you coming out of the draft feeling like, all right, this is pretty interesting? Or are you kind of like, eh, on it as a whole?
As a whole, I'm pretty interested in it, but entering it, it felt like running back was really strong. Tight end was super strong. Quarterback, you know, you had, at least to me, three really good ones. And then some intriguing guys. And then wide receiver was good, but maybe not quite as good as previous classes, but there's this small area, and I know you'll understand this, where I felt like there's a second tier of guys that if they don't land on a certain amount of landmines within their game, could wind up making this class way better than what people think. But the percent chance of that happening is probably pretty small. So it's good, but not as good as the previous. Now, after the draft, I look at it and I go, receivers had some good fits. Running backs had some mixed bag fits that kind of take a little bit of the bite off of how good the class was. But the tight ends and the running backs, the quarterbacks were still pretty good fits overall. In fact, the quarterbacks might have had some really strong fits overall that makes this class intriguing for sure. I look at it and I think that it's definitely a worthwhile one that I wouldn't be trading away for future picks. So instead I'd be investing in these guys. What about you?
It's fascinating. You know, we did the dynasty rookie mock draft with JJ Zacharyson a couple episodes ago, and there is a little bit of like, I don't know if I want to call it a drop off, but it starts to, you're clicking names with less conviction when you get into that back half of the first round. But from that point on to, I think, late into the second round of rookie drafts, it feels like you said, I could see guys that go in that second round range, you're like, damn, why were we not taking them at 108 or something like that in a couple of years now? It's the receiver group. I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's kind of similar to my opinion that like this could end up being a draft like 2019, where we went into it like, oh, this is not a good receiver class, only two guys go in the first round. But then a bunch of dudes came out of that class, you know, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Terry McLaurin, Deontay Johnson, Debo Samuel. Like, those guys are all really good, productive players. Some of them are like the superstars of the league right now at the position. I don't know if we're going to get that from this class, but I think we could get some surprising names that sort of make the class look stronger 3 to 4 years from now than it does today.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, because I mean, I think of guys, there's a lot of guys with like one or two things really missing from their games that could be corrected. Like, I'll put it this way. The guy that I think of that is Michael Wilson out of Arizona, who to me is one of the best route runners in the class in terms of release combinations and what he can do with routes and setting up defenders. And if you look at his metrics, you look at his size, you look at his route running skills, and I think he's a spitting image of Michael Thomas if he could just hang on to the ball with the same kind of like skill that Thomas can. He even had the same kind of injury or a similar kind of injury as Thomas. So I laugh because you look at a guy like that, or you know, we see guys like Quentin Johnston. We'll talk more about him. Tank Dell. Those are all Tyler Scott. There's some A.T. Perry, a lot of exciting guys who there's just something there that you go, there's a landmine near them. Don't step on the landmine or your career may not be what it could be if you can avoid. And then to me, there's a guy like, you know, Jonathan Mingo, who may not have had a beautiful career statistically, but I look at him and I think he may be in the midst of this landmine strewn field. But if I was going to bet on anybody emerging from it, basically with just maybe a tattered jersey, it would be him, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it makes it a very fun class. Or Jaden Reed, you know, another example of a guy that I love.
I love Jaden Reed too. And I'm sure we might talk about him in the wide receiver section here, but he was the example that was coming to my mind when it's like, it's not as much landmines for Jaden Reed. It's just like, I've said this on the podcast before, like a couple of tweaks here or there. And he would be like he would be considered like a top three receiver in this class. He obviously didn't get there in college, but who's to say he's not going to get there as a pro receiver. So yeah, I think we're on the same page about the class as a whole. Because I'm not a very good podcast host, I should have asked you this question before I asked the last question before we jump into the fits. For the people who are not familiar with the rookie scouting portfolio, the RSP, tell everybody kind of what goes into it, the listeners here who aren't familiar with your product.
Sure. I've been doing this it's in its 18th year. It is one of the two most purchased draft guides by NFL personnel, scouts, personnel folks, according to folks like Alex Brown, who was the director of recruiting at SMU. So I'm very proud of that, to know that it's not just a fantasy football product, which I'm very grateful for. But it's also an NFL approved product in terms of, you know, how people use it for cross-checking what they do. And really what goes into it is, you know, I watch film pretty much every day, almost year round. I have a pretty much over like 100 criteria points that I define very clearly based on best practices that I learned and got trained on in other industries to develop tools for evaluating players. So I define everything. I give it a weighted score. There's literally two ways that I score players, based on depth of talent and breadth of talent. I take you through that process with the pre-draft RSP. I give you rankings, of those players after I go through it on a 100-point scale. You see in a very transparent way how I score everything and how I look at technique, concepts, athletic skills, and why I grade them the way I do. And it helps you see kind of how I break down players at the same position and then also across positions. And then of course the post draft comes out a week later. I give you a cheat sheet that gives you not only tiers for across 200 position, you know, players. It's also something where I actually give you like a ADP versus my post draft ranking, like a sweet spot. So like in the past when I would tell you, listen, AJ Brown's the best fit in this class, or Justin Jefferson's a highly underrated player and maybe the best fit in this class, or Patrick Mahomes and Nick Chubb. Those guys, I think, are some of the best players to come along in forever. You don't have to draft them in the first round because people didn't think that. So I show you where you can get them and not get sniped, but also still collect value by giving you a sweet spot value. So what goes into this is just, you know, hours of watching, redefining stuff. You know, if you're watching the video, you'll see there's a board behind me of notes that I'm taking and doing this year after year after year. It's about continuously improving a process and building one that anyone could do if they decided they wanted to put the hours in to do it. And I just was willing to put the 10,000 hours in.
Yeah, nobody should try to do that much work, but we're grateful that you do that much work. The RSP is old enough to buy cigarettes now, man. That's good to see. I've been buying it, I think, for like the last, you know, 10-ish years or something. And my policy now is like, I will buy it on April 1st every year it comes out or pre-order it. But I will not look at it until after all my rookie work is posted on Reception Perception. Then I like to see again where you and I are kind of the same or different. And I know we look, again, it's taking those processes from past lives. We both do that and apply it to football. And I think the product that you put out is really great. It speaks for itself. Some of the hits that you've had over the years. So everybody should check it out, but let's jump right into it here. So what we're going to do on this show is we're pretty much going to kick this thing around a little bit at each position. We're going to try to rank the top five fits at running backs from this year's rookies and wide receivers. And then we'll do 1 to 3 at quarterback and tight end. Tight end's interesting. We might actually end up going a little longer than that. But again, I don't have like a necessarily big agenda for this. This is going to be a little off the cuff here. So let's get started at the running back position, because this is where I think you can really fill in my gaps. You know, I look at a decent bit of these running backs and everything, but I'm interested. Maybe let's just start and get the Bijan Robinson thing out of the way, because he's obviously the top back in this class across the board. Is he the number one fit in the class as well in Arthur Smith's offense? Obviously a team in the Falcons that you've spent a lot of time watching the Falcons, you know, and everything through the years.
Yeah, easily. Because when you look at what Tyler Allgeier did last year, who is came from an outside zone system at BYU, but really was better fit, in my opinion, as a gap runner, because of the fact that he wasn't a great cutback runner. Well, Atlanta's offensive line really played well as a run unit down the stretch against some decent teams in terms of how they played disciplined defense against the run. And he did well in both gap schemes and outside zone, but wasn't quite as effective as a cutback runner. But still, when they gave him openings, and he looked great because he's a determined runner. At the same time, you know, Robinson, when you look at what he can do, he's a strong cutback runner, equally good, if not better, receiver than Allgeier, and far more explosive. So when you put all that decision-making prowess, power, and explosion together, you know, you're going to have, with a team that has a strong offensive line, or at least an up-and-coming one that's really starting to gel, he's going to get all the touches that you need for him to become a high-end producer, and for sure one of the top picks in this class.
I'm curious about your thoughts on how he might fit in as a non-running back in this offense. I thought it was fascinating that Arthur Smith at his post-draft presser was like, you know, the running back stuff is obvious. Like, you can just go watch that on film. But what intrigues us and why we take him at 8th overall, sort of paraphrasing here, is like the potential to do things from the slot. And I know that, like, it's always a trope, you know, like running backs lined up in the slot. Like, Christian McCaffrey had like 100 yards lined up from the non-backfield last year. And that was like that was way like leading the league, you know? So it's always a little bit of a trope, but I think not necessarily from a production standpoint, but even just like what this team does from a personnel deployment standpoint, how it can be really creative and open things up for other guys. How do you think he fits in as like a non-running back on this offense too?
And I think it's a great question, and I love how you clarify it, because yeah, it may not be McCaffrey or Eckler in terms of him running, you know, routes from the slot in a way that a wide receiver would. But when you see him at Texas and watch him run post patterns, deep posts, and catch the ball like a wide receiver against the safety ready to plaster him, or you see how he tracks the ball on deeper routes, working sail routes or, you know, a seam route, you can see that the ability to do that is there. And when you can make plays like a wide receiver in zones or in loose, you know, off man coverage, where you're forcing defenders to honor your ability to catch the ball and make tough plays, then that opens up the field for a lot of diversity with your offensive looks in the red zone. It also helps in, you know, in the middle of the field, and then you can do some things that force defenses to account for Cordero Patterson, who may never have made it as a wide receiver, but we know that he can catch like a wide receiver. And if you give him running back playing wide receiver like routes, he's still awesome. And accounting for those two guys, plus maybe even Eckler, and the tight ends they have, you know, it really creates a multiple effect for your offense that makes defenses, puts them in a position where they're in binds, and now creates easy plays for their quarterback.
I think we just get lost with this stuff talking about fantasy production sometimes, because you can, even if Bijan lines up in the slot, you know, a small handful of plays, it can really mess with the defense, and maybe that opens up something for Drake London as the X receiver, or it opens up something for Kyle Pitts as a vertical tight end, you know, or like you said, even opens up a rushing lane for Tyler Allgeier or Cordarrelle Patterson or any of these guys. Like, there's just a ton of potential for that, even if it doesn't necessarily show up in the stat sheet, because we're just so stat sheet obsessed here in fantasy football. Yeah. But all right, give me another running back. And, you know, this doesn't have to be your second best one. This could be, we could decide it goes anywhere from 2 to 5, but another running back fit that, like, when you saw this team take this guy, you're like, oh yeah, that clicks to me.
Well, it's really more, this one's going to be more on the lower end of the scale. We're going to go towards the bottom, and I'll say Sean Tucker with Tampa Bay as an undrafted free agent who got a signing bonus that was pretty hefty. And you look at Rashad White, who, you know, everybody loved that he could catch the ball, big, strong, fast, not a great decision maker. Leonard Fournette outplayed Rashad White, if you ask me, as a decision maker and in terms of efficiency. And so White still has some things to learn, and there's not much behind him right now. So unless they don't go opt for a veteran later in the season or there's not a trade, Tucker had some of the best acceleration of any of the backs that I watched. So he would definitely be my fifth guy on this list in terms of fit, because, you know, on the one hand, he's a late round, he's an undrafted guy, so he's going to have a lot to prove. But when you give a signing bonus to a guy like that, that says, we're, you know, you dropped due to injury. You didn't drop due to, we didn't think that you were a good player. And in with that team, they're going to, that offensive line's a little bit weak, but Baker Mayfield needs running back support in order to succeed, and or Kyle Trask or anybody else that they trade for, even if it's Trey Lance, if they trade for Trey Lance down the line or something like that, they're still going to have a young or unproven or, you know, so-so quarterback at best that needs a run game. And Tucker can be decisive. He's a good cutback runner, and he definitely has the acceleration to get into the secondary, and he catches the ball pretty well. I mean, I thought this was a guy that would get drafted in the fifth or sixth round, and so it's a good opportunity for him to prove himself.
Yeah, Sean Tucker out of Syracuse, incredibly productive, great college career. Like you said, he has a ton of skills. He just fell due to, it was like a heart concern, right? I mean, like, not, or, and just general injury stuff. So, like, and you mentioned the contract. They gave him a guaranteed $155,000 for an undrafted free agent. That's a good chunk of change, you know, to get that.
Yeah, it's not a $5,000 bonus that you usually see. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I think that speaks to why this could be really interesting. So I'm glad that's spicy. I'm glad we have him. We'll put him at number 5 on our list. I wanted to ask you about Kendre Miller, the running back for the Saints. Is he a potential guy for this list? Because it when you look at it, like, you know, he's behind. I'm not even necessarily talking about the other players on his depth chart. You know, Alvin Kamara, obviously big name. He might get suspended. You know, he did restructure his contract. Jamal Williams is a good player. I've always liked Jamal Williams. But, you know, I do think Kendre Miller in this offense behind that offensive line could be a potential good fit. Does he potentially make this top 5 here?
He could. But to me, it's like that Alonzo Mourning meme where he's on the bench and he's kind of like, you know, making the faces debating it with himself. That's where I am with him. It's like a mixed bag that I would take a chance on when I look at Miller, because you've got Alvin Kamara, who, when healthy and when, if he's cleared of the legal matters, is still one of the most talented backs in the league. Zen-like contact balance. Jamal Williams, as you said, good football player. Both of them are super skilled as pass protectors and pass receivers, route runners. And then when you have Miller obviously is a good tackle breaker. He's got smooth burst. Reminds me of Lamar Miller in terms of how smooth he kind of glides and accelerates, but he also has strength. And his receiving game and blocking game have enough elements for him to get good, but it's not going to happen right away. So it's one of those things that, you know, yes, if Alvin Kamara ends up guilty and ends up off the Saints, Kendre Miller's in the committee right away and could wind up the lead back by year two, maybe even by the end of the year. If injury strikes, that could certainly happen. But then there's that other element of, like, what if Kamara's found not guilty, or his sentence is very light and pleads down, and it's, he misses maybe a handful of games and that's it. Two 28-year-old backs, still one of them might still play another 2-3 years. I mean, they had let Mark Ingram hang around for a while there.
A lot of time, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like with that from that standpoint, it could be 2-3 years. And then Kendre Miller's kind of in that Alexander Mattison like holding cell you know, he's good enough to contribute, but will he get the chance to really be the guy? And like every year you're drafting him after the 10th round, just hoping that maybe that opportunity comes for him. So I see paths, but they're very defined paths in opposite directions. And I take the chance, but it's not one that I'm going to invest highly in right this year.
Okay. So I'm glad that you brought up the Jamal Williams as a pass protector point, because I think the last few years with the Lions have really kind of made people forget that he was a guy who was keeping Aaron Jones off the field early in his Green Bay years because he was such a good pass protector. So, you know, if he's just super efficient in that role and Kamara is still around, then it is kind of like, all right, where does Kendre Miller fit there? Because he's not good, because he's probably an early down guy, and I think he brings a lot of early down juice. But
for sure, you know,
is he going to take reps away from those guys? That's a fair point. So give me another name you think fits somewhere between Bijan Robinson and Sean Tucker here. If we're not putting Miller at 2-3-4,
at 4, I'm going to go with Chase Brown, because a guy who's probably on his way out is Joe Mixon.
And
it's just multiple issues with, you know, off the field that are related in a sense, you know, the fact that it's violence or threats of violence against women. So you're looking at that, and, you know, I'm not here and we're not here to talk about what you should or shouldn't do as a fantasy GM in terms of making choices with players, you know, based on their criminal records or arrest records. But what I would say is that if Mixon is indeed on his way out, there's Travion Williams and basically that's it. Before Brown and Travion Williams, when I study backs, one of the things I look for is contact balance. Can you win at least an indirect collision with a linebacker heading downhill through a crease? And I track this stuff. Okay. I literally chart this stuff. There are two backs in 18 years that I have studied who failed to win indirect collisions with linebackers and actually had good starting seasons. And that's the, Darren McFadden and Marlon Mack. The only two. And Travion Williams did not, he failed that category. So unless he's improved, Chase Brown to me has been able to do that. He has some wonky decision-making that scouts will not always like because he turns his back into contact, but he's got great acceleration. He does run hard. He's a versatile enough back. He's going to get a shot. And that's an offensive line and a passing game that's strong enough that he's going to get some strong opportunities. So he may not be one of the most talented backs on my board, but his fit and his talent combined to that make him one of the best fits from this past draft.
Yeah, Chase Brown out of Illinois got a ton of work, right? Like just was a workhorse back in college. And I think your point about Travion Williams is interesting, and especially those two names you brought up, like Darren McFadden and Marlon Mack, those were guys that had a ton of speed, like a ton of pure, just breakaway ability, like so that if they weren't consistently good off contact, they might be able to make up for it on their other runs. Marlon Mack was such a fascinating guy coming out, and, you know, unfortunately he's an Achilles back, but I like this Chase Brown pick here because there's just, you're never going to get stacked boxes as a Cincinnati Bengals running back. They're always going to be thinking about how do we defend. They put you in so many binds as a passing offense. The last thing you're thinking about is, all right, well, let me also worry about the running game. So if you get a guy that's just like can handle a ton of work and can get what's there, and maybe as he learns along the way how to add a little extra to it, I think he could be an interesting fit there.
Yeah, if you take look at Samaje Perine last year, who would never be classified as a speedster. He's more of like your granddad's tractor out in the field, you know. But like at the same time, the light boxes that he would often face, if you give him just some momentum downhill, forget about it, because he's just gonna crush you. And you could see that he had a lot of chain moving runs last year. In relief of that, and Chase Brown is no tractor. He's got a jetpack strapped onto the back of that thing.
So, Waldman, there's no way you remember this, but I only remember this because this popped up in my like Instagram memories recently. Remember when my old buddy Franchise from the NFL Network, we were doing the Fantasy Hipsters podcast back in the day. You compared Samaje Perine to a cast iron skillet, and like that was a like your granddad's cast iron skillet. And that thing is gonna last, and it's gonna last, and it's gonna last, and it's gonna last, and it's gonna do anything. Yeah. But it's not the thing that like Gordon Ramsay's pulling out, you know, at the at the Next Level Chef.
But sure,
by the way.
But your Florida, granddad, I see on TikTok, will pull it out and beat an alligator off with it.
100%.
Just beat him on the head and send him packing, which I literally saw yesterday. So there you go. You know, I'm a state over, so I understand these things about Florida men.
Yeah. You don't have to tell me twice. All right. 2-3 here. How about a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs? You know, does he fit in this range for you? I'm just throwing out another name that obviously went high in the draft.
Yeah, he would be number two on my board right away, because really DeAndre Swift, I've always had criticisms about Swift. I mean, he's a talented player. Very good. He's a good enough pass catcher. He's good in open space, but he was not a great decision maker. And there's a reason why he's gone, because they can only use him on plays that happened in space or plays that simulated space. Ask him to run between boxes and be patient and make the right decisions and not bounce things outside. It was a no-go. Jahmyr Gibbs is basically DeAndre Swift with better decision-making skills and more explosion and arguably better hands. And so when I look at this offense, he's going to get that Gibbs, he's going to get that Swift role, but they're now going to be able to expand it to what they envisioned Swift would be doing. But instead they had to contract the offense for Swift and say, we're only going to put you on the field for draws and delays and plays to the outside and swing passes and screens. And with Gibbs now, the offense becomes less predictable because there's going to be some overlap between what Gibbs can do for you on limited touches inside and what they're going to do with David Montgomery. And so now teams don't go, oh, well, Swift's in the game. We know they're only going to run X, Y, or Z, you know, with him. With Gibbs, they won't know that. To me, Jahmyr Gibbs is kind of, I joke that he's between two Falks when you look at the comparison. He's better than Kevin Falk, who was a fine player who might have been better in this era of the NFL. And he's not quite Marshall Falk, but he's certainly a guy that could give you statistics that make you think of Falk-like seasons occasionally if things really click.
Couple of really good points there. One, that we think about, like, okay, this player's in the game. We know it's more likely to be a run or a pass, especially at the running back position. But it goes even beyond that. Like you said, like, if a back is only in there that can run a few small handfuls of concepts, like, or you look at, like, this is why teams watch film. They're watching film for tendencies and stuff like that. It's like, oh, DeAndre Swift's in the game. They're going to be running like this small handful of runs. We know how to defend that run better. It goes even beyond just a traditional run and pass. And like you basically said what I've been saying on this podcast, that I think the Lions view Jahmyr Gibbs as the actualized version of what DeAndre Swift was in theory. And I think that, you know, a lot of fantasy folks were really in on DeAndre Swift because of the player he was. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is probably just going to be the upgraded version of that. And again, you could quibble with the positional value, all that stuff, but it's a fun fit in the offense. I'm a little, I mean, obviously when Jameson Williams gets out there, that'll be great. But for the first like 6 weeks of the season, it's like, okay, you got like a space guy in Jahmyr Gibbs. You got the best like space big slot receiver, one of them in the NFL right now, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. And you got kind of like a spacey move tight end in Sam Laporta. Are we throwing anything beyond 15 yards? Are we throwing anything beyond 20 yards in the first 6 weeks of the season? I got questions about that. But for the meantime, it is pretty fun. So we got one more spot here on the top five best fits from the 2023 NFL draft class. Who do you got here?
This is my favorite player to watch on film and at running back this year. And it's Zach Evans, the Ole Miss running back who got picked late by the Rams. I think Zach Evans talent wise is honestly up there with Robinson and Gibbs. I think he's that good. He was a five-star prospect who got committed to Georgia. And then because his grandfather died, who was really the guiding force in his life, he handled his own recruiting, had this quixotic journey, and everybody kind of labeled him kind of a flake or entitled or all these things, even though he was like great academically, good kid, really didn't have any major issues. But he got overtaken, people said, by Kendre Miller. But if you look at how it really played out on film and on stats, that's not the case. He just left for a better deal because TCU didn't have their NIL stuff together, and Gary Patterson thought they were going to lose 30 players last year who were starters, and he was one of them. And then TCU got it together. No one thought TCU was going to end up playing Georgia.
That's true.
In the national championship. So Evans is a smooth, smart runner that reminds me a combo of Dalvin Cook and Clinton Portis. He can run gap. He can run zone, which are the two main concepts that you see in the running games in the NFL. Very patient runner, very creative, but efficient with his creativity. Not a great pass catcher, but he can do checkdowns for you. It's kind of like Nick Chubb. You may occasionally see him make a big play, and you'd like to see them use him more maybe, but at the same time, they may find another guy. Cam Akers had a great second half of the year once he came back. I mean, I thought that's the best I've seen him look. But he's got 1 year left. And if he gets hurt, they need somebody to kind of be the committee guy with him. Evans could get that first shot because, let's just face it, I mean, they have two scat backs. They got the kid Williams out of Notre Dame, and then the kid out of Fresno State, Ronnie Rivers, who I think is actually a better scat back than Williams is. So they need another guy who can be that two down back or potentially grow into a three down player. And really, if you combine Clinton Portis with some Dalvin Cook, you got a guy by the name of Aaron Jones. That's kind of a guy in that realm. And I think Zach Evans has a lot of that to his game and could really surprise the NFL. I think he could be, if you told me that Zach Evans is the most productive back in this class in 5 years, I would not be shocked. At the same time, I would not be shocked that if there are maturity concerns that I couldn't find really other than what's linked to him and that they really weren't overblown, that we don't hear from Zach Evans and he just goes the way of some, as a nice number two running back that never gets a shot. I wouldn't be surprised about that either. So
yeah, definitely wide range of outcomes for the player there, but I think it's a good fit. And on an offense in Sean McVay's system, that's been a little like amorphous over the years. Like they've gone a lot of different directions, even if it comes like to the personnel sets they use, they've been too tight end heavy. Sometimes they've been 11 personnel heavy. They're still pretty outside zone based, but they've also done a lot to mix in different talents at the running back position. And look, I think McVay's got a wandering eye at the running back position for sure. Ever since Todd Gurley, look, and like, I get it. You're not going to find it like Todd Gurley. You've got Todd Gurley. That's a lockdown, set it and forget it, wife it up, marry it, everything. Like that's the back that you've got there. But after that, it's like, okay, yeah, you want to let your eye wander a little bit between all these guys. I totally understand. So maybe at some point that eye lands on Zach Evans there. I like that call as a fit here.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and a lot of system guys are that way, whether it's Shanahan or McVay, they tend to lead with their system over their personnel. And you'll always hear people say on the extreme end of that behavior, sometimes what happens is that they see these players as kind of cogs or pixels on a screen and they're running the video game and their ego can get really invested in that. And then if a player doesn't quite, look at Trey Lance and Brock Purdy. It's like no one would confuse the two physically in terms of the skills that they offer. But you can see how Kyle Shanahan just gets the stink eye for players who may freelance a little too much, who may make mistakes that they don't really like, and then they want the guy who's just the extension of them. It's almost kind of that slight bit of narcissism where they see a player as an extension of their system. And, I'm not saying that is definitely the case, but you can see where the evidence of that might be.
And you could also like not blame them for the fact that, hey, my system is really good. Like,
right,
just run it.
Yeah, but we're going to get to the championship game if you just do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. All right. So our top five fits from this draft class at the running back position. And again, these are not Waldman's top five backs. It's just the guys who fit really well. Number one, Bijan Robinson, who is the best back from this class, fits. Number one, Atlanta Falcons. Number two, Jahmyr Gibbs of Detroit Lions. Number three, Zach Evans with the LA Rams. Number four, Chase Brown with the Cincinnati Bengals. And number five, undrafted free agent Sean Tucker with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All right, let's move to wide receivers here. And I'm a gracious podcast host. I'm going to let you start and tell me where, like, you can, you have, I got takes on takes at the wide receiver position, but you could go from 1 to 5 anywhere, slot anyone in a fit that you really like. As you mentioned, a lot of good fits, I think, at this position in this class. We're going to leave some guys off that we don't want to, but I'll let you go here.
Yeah. And I laugh because it's like, there is probably no one that I would laugh when I hear someone say, I'm going to let you lead first with this one. There's only one person that in this industry that I would go, oh, fun. This is going to be fun. I'm going to get to see what he thinks. And I'm actually really interested in that on that level, because there's no one who looks at wide receivers quite the way you do, you know. And obviously, if there was a, obviously I've touted your product in the past and I continue to, you know, if you're not, obviously it's your podcast. Everyone listening knows I don't have to say, but if you crawled out from under a rock and you've never, and you just happened upon this podcast and you're not buying Reception Perception, you need to get started yesterday. So, but you know, with that said, I guess, you know, a guy that I will say is a good fit, who I didn't love as much as a lot of people, was Quentin Johnston. Talent wise, when I see guys, I know that, you know, dropping passes is not a sticky stat, but it's how you drop passes that can be an issue. And he kind of claps on passes like someone like at a 70s, who, you know, 70s rock concert, you know, yeah, in terms of how he does overhead stuff. Yeah. And he just doesn't have great positioning skills as an outside receiver. But TCU's also been known for miscasting receivers in outside roles where they shouldn't be. You know, Jalen Reagor was one that apparently the Gary Patterson told the Eagles that they misused him on purpose because he was the best athlete on their team. So on the receiver course, they had to use him that way. But then the Eagles went ahead and used him in that same miscast way, even though they said they weren't going to. That's what Fran Duffy over at Eagles.com said and told me. But Johnson's, it's a net positive for him because he has a top quarterback. He gets to work with Keenan Allen, who can still at this point, even if he's slower, can still play flanker. You can put him in flanker if you need him to.
Yeah.
You've got Mike Williams in the outside on the at split end. So it's kind of like Kenny Golladay when he was in Detroit getting to work with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones, two really good veterans at the prime of their careers, or Claypool, you know, in Pittsburgh early on, where he's buffered. He gets good matchups. He's going to get to play in the slot most likely, where he runs good enough routes that are quick breaking or breaking back to the quarterback type of routes, where he's going to earn the position skilled enough to, and he makes good catches on those types of plays, and then he runs well after the catch. So I think for him, he's going to, instead of him having to be like Gabriel Davis going deep and then dropping half of his passes or only catching half of his passes, you're going to get a guy who's going to get prime matchups early and get kind of eased into it, but still given high-end, high-leverage opportunities.
Yeah, I really would have hated if he went to a place that needed like a one right away.
Yes.
You know, obviously Baltimore has a ton of guys they've added, but like based on injuries, he could have been like a one there at some point, you know, this season, or even like a Green Bay or something that already has like kind of a volatile quote number one receiver in Christian Watson. You know, I think the fact that he, like, there's two proven guys, and like he might be the dude in 2024, but I'm not the biggest Josh Palmer fan in the world. And I think people that follow my work know that, but like the fact that even they have Palmer there, that like in the first 4 weeks of the season, they just mix in Johnson situationally, like deep posts, or, you know, they run after catch stuff in breaking routes from the slot or off, like not at the X receiver position because they have Mike Williams. They can do a lot of that and mix him in early and develop him. So where do you think from 1 to 5 he would fit? Like, I kind of feel like he's not one of my top two, but I could hear anywhere from 3 to 5.
Yeah, let's go ahead and put him at four. Let's do that.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. Okay, I like that. Okay, yeah, Chargers, Quentin Johnston, like that there. Okay, I'll give you one, and I want to see if you think this is worth top five.
All right.
Yeah, I'll go with Josh Downs from Indianapolis. I like the player a lot, but I think the fit is what's really interesting to me because he offers you something that the other two guys do not. And I'm a big fan of Michael Pittman. I like Alec Pierce too, as a situational X receiver, deep threat, stuff like that. But man, I think like having Josh Downs getting two-way goes, free releases, stuff like that, option routes from the slot. I like Anthony Richardson. I know we'll talk about Anthony Richardson here in a second. I think the fact that he offers something different than those guys is what makes it a really good fit to me. Even if you have questions about Josh Downs as a player, you know, size, everything like that, I totally understand it. I think from a fit perspective, he fits in really well. But what do you think? Does you think it's worth top five among this class or no?
If there's a player that I missed on, and I wouldn't even say miss is the best word because I have a good grade for him, but he wasn't ranked high. My grade was, though, in the realm of where you should expect good things from him. He would be the player that I may be lower on than what I would like, that would have liked. But the question is, you look at the Colts, and they used 11 personnel as its base on 77% of its snaps in 2022, with 12 personnel, two tight ends, is the second most frequent alignment at 14.7%. Now, Shane Steichen comes to town, and he used 11 personnel on 70.5% snaps in Philadelphia last year, with 12 and 13 personnel constituting 27% of his offense. So 97% of his offense, you know, you're going to see tight end on the field. Now, we're hearing the possibility that they may just spread this sucker out and go empty a lot, but how much is really a lot?
Yeah,
because yeah. you've got Jonathan Taylor,
yeah,
and awesome. This offensive line who is unbelievably awesome. Are you telling me you're going to spread the field? I mean, Jonathan Taylor is great. You could use him in that way, but Steichen's versatile, and he's worked with the Rams where 11 personnel was the king, but he's also worked in Philadelphia where he's like, we're going to use a lot of two tight end sets, and there's a lot of tight ends on that depth chart in Indianapolis. So yeah. I'm a little bit mixed on this one because I could see where he's in a Hunter Renfrow situation. But that could the best end of Hunter Renfrow or the worst end of Hunter Renfrow, like last year in terms of like opportunity and injury was a part too. But I just think of this and I go, you've got a quarterback who needs a little bit more time. And I'm a big fan of him, but you know, spreading the field can help, but also the other end of the spectrum, which is play action passing with a run game with a tight end. So I'm going to have to say, I'm willing to continue to say, oh, I missed on this if it doesn't work out, but I'm going to say he's a bit of a mixed bag for me.
Okay. Fair point there. Then I will throw out, maybe we'll contend and have him at five. I'll leave it open for now in case we can't find any other ones that we can come to a consensus on. What about a couple guys you mentioned up top, Jonathan Mingo, Jaden Reed, that aren't first rounders. I know we want to get the first round guys in here because there's good fits there. Do either of those two from a fit perspective stand out? I'll give you the quick pitch, my opinion on Jaden Reed and Mingo. I think both, like Jaden Reed, I think could play anywhere. I think he could play at X. I think he could play at Z. I think he could play at slot. And I think Green Bay has a lot of potential to throw a guy out there at any spot. You know, Romeo Doubs give you some mixed stuff as a rookie, as an X receiver. Another guy that like he's a little bit of an adventure at the catch point. Like he might make a great contested catch. He might really mess that thing up from even just a pure clanking drop perspective. But again, I think he could give you competency at the X receiver position. Christian Watson is like a movable chess piece. He is not there as a route runner. He's not there from a press coverage standpoint to be an X receiver. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Jaden Reed's better than both those guys, an X receiver. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the better flanker receiver than any of those two guys. And lastly, I think Green Bay, I've seen the stat that they lost like so many of their guys that, you know, the slot receiver snaps, even the tight ends, obviously they're mixing into rookies here. Reed could just be their pure slot receiver, right, this year. So I think from a fit perspective, he went higher in the draft than a lot of people thought. Not me. I love Jaden Reed. Huge fan. Number one in success rate versus press in the class in reception perception. I would not be surprised if he fits. I love his fit in Green Bay.
Yeah, and I understand that completely because, you know, I had Jaden Reed pre-draft, I believe, as, yeah, my number seven receiver on my board.
Pretty similar.
Which was, you know, definitely and a starter grade, like an immediate starter grade. Plug him in and it works out. So I'm confident in his ability, and I agree with you. He's like a Stephon Diggs starter kit. Like he's and he has all the – he has most of the pieces that you need for him to have success and play all three positions, as you said. I'm just wondering about Jordan Reed. And if Jordan Love,
yeah,
Jordan Love, if he's developed in his time off the field, and if he has, Reed's going to be a cornerstone of a good passing offense. He could be one of the top two weapons, like you said. But if he struggles, the team struggles. They've got, you know, they've drafted a bunch of guys, but we don't know who's going to work out quite yet. And the coaches get fired, then Reed could get thrown out with the rest of the young players from an old regime. I don't think he will, but yeah, that's kind of the risk. So I'm willing to put him like in the 4 or 5 range as a good fit, just only because if he were with a more established quarterback, he'd maybe top two, but a little bit lower because of Jordan Love.
Okay, so those are a couple contenders we have, Reed and Downs for 5. Let's get to the top here. Who do you think is like number 1 or 2 in this class in terms of pure fit?
Yeah, in terms of pure fit, you know, Jordan Addison will be number 2. Okay.
Yeah.
Mainly because the media touted Devonta Smith and Calvin Ridley as physical receivers, but to me, they're too small to really win against physical play at the boundary from top cover corners. Doesn't mean that they're, you know, doesn't mean that their percentages of success aren't maybe strong, but when you're facing a Jalen Ramsey in his prime on 3rd and 17, and he knows that you're running the quarter route or you're running the comeback or the deep out, are you going to beat him still? Stephon Diggs will, but I think Jordan Addison and Calvin Ridley are the kind of guys they need. They're like the little guy in the movie that needs the bully behind them, and they do the tough talking, you know, mm-hmm. and start goading the kid, and then they bring the bully out to take care of him, like A.J. Brown and Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson's the bully. Jordan Addison now gets enough pressure off of him from the types of coverage that he'd have to face as a number one, where he can give you wide receiver one production, but it's really kind of off the back of the bully in this offense. And I think with a competent quarterback like Kirk Cousins, and the way this offense runs, he can be that Devonta Smith to A.J. Brown in the way that, you know, but as the Jordan Addison to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best bullies in the league in Justin Jefferson right there. And I mean, that was one of those picks, like I said at the top, about like post-draft and pre-draft analysis. It's like, well, I care a lot less about some of those concerns that I had pre-draft with Jordan Addison because he landed here across one of the 2 or 3 best receivers in pro football here in Justin Jefferson. And, you know, Kevin O'Connell even said it in the post-draft presser, like, he's going to get some of the most favorable looks in the entire NFL, you know, and all he has to do is just go win. And I think you see enough on his, even the USC film, obviously the Pitt film, like, you see enough of him winning against those type of looks, off man coverage, you know, loose zone coverage, you know, especially on in breaking routes, he's going to put up big numbers, I think, as that second receiver. So I agree with you that had to be either the 1 or 2 in terms of fit, but let's, I don't know. Give me another one. You throw me another one out here.
I think my number one is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And I know a lot of people may not feel that way, because they think, well, we've got Tyler Lockett, we've got DK Metcalf, and, you know, lots of criticism about the Seahawks coaching and all that. Well, Shane Waldron, I think he wanted to use a lot more 11 personnel. They drafted a kid in the second round by the name of Dwayne Eskridge, who was an exciting young player, but got concussed his first year and then really didn't emerge year two either. So if you really didn't have another player behind him to be that big play slot receiver in the way that Cooper Kupp's a big play slot receiver with the Rams, what are you going to do? Well, you roll with the tight end. You roll with the personnel you got, which is tight end. So they played a lot more 12 personnel. They didn't play as much 11 as they did in, you know, that Waldron used with Sean McVay, you know, when he was there. And when you look at Smith-Njigba, to me, he has the skills to be the Seattle's version of Cooper Kupp. When he reads zone coverage well, his release skills have real craft to it. He's lightning quick like Kupp against tight coverage. And he should be running free a lot in the middle of the field early in his career. And I think he could have a 100 catch season as early as like 2026. And the thing is, we have to remember that people go, well, the percentages of the plays that were used didn't favor 11 personnel, and they don't want to do that. And they're saying, when we asked about them this year, I think it was Scott Barrett who asked about it, you know, who does fantastic work talking about, you know, asked about the percentage of coverages, and Pete Carroll said, well, you know, he kind of made it sound like that we're going to continue to rely on our tight ends and things like that. But what are you going to do as a coach when you're asked by the media about this? Are you going to say, well, we were really counting on Dwayne Eskridge, who's in his third year right now, and we're hoping he can still be good and get some value out of him via trade, or if in case there's an injury, are we going to throw him under the bus and make him question that? Or are we going to say, we really don't want to use our tight ends, but we had to? I mean, they're not that great, but you know, no, you're going to talk up all your players because you know there's a time where you may need them. So listening to that and saying, well, that means they're going to roll with this. No, it means you're just not. Maybe we need to be a little bit more critical with how we analyze this information. We know that a second round pick like Eskridge, that was their attempt to be able to be 11 personnel when they brought in the Rams guy in the first place, and it just didn't work. Now they doubled down and said, let's get someone who legitimately can give us cup-like skills at this position and maybe a shot to work outside down the line if Tyler Lockett, you know, we move away from Lockett as he gets older.
I mean, yeah, that if there's one thing I've learned doing the podcast with Austin Eckler during the season, it's like these coaches and their teammates, by the way, don't want to just bang on guys. And like they're very careful about the language that they use. Like, even if they just came out and said, like, yeah, we're moving away from 12 personnel, then like a guy like Will Dissly or Noah Fant's gonna hear that and be like,
trade me.
Get me out of here. Or just like, what the hell? Like, we went to the playoffs last year with me playing a big role, you know? And like, even if a guy like Dissly or whatever doesn't put up big stats, they obviously value him and they want him to, when they get 12 personnel on the field, they want to get good play out of Fant or Dissly or any of these guys. Parkinson, I think, was another one. So like they're coming out and being like, yep, we're an 11 personnel team right now. The other guys are going to feel banged by that. There's a lot of like ego massaging that has to go into this. And just again, like, Pete Carroll might really love what he gets out of his 12 personnel offense, but like you don't take a receiver 20th overall and then just be like a 12 personnel team when you have two of the best wide receivers in the NFL right now. So I feel like this like groundswell of panic over the Seahawks 12 personnel usage. We just talked about this with the Rams and Sean McVay that like who Shane Waldron comes from. When they had two really good tight ends, they were a 12 personnel team. When they had Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, Cooper Kupp, they were almost exclusively 11 personnel. So, and taking a receiver 20th overall, it speaks to what they want to do. I mean,
all I know, Matt, is that when Justin Jefferson got drafted and they said, oh, that's not a great fit because they already got Adam Thielen. And I'm like, no, that's the best fit this year. And then before that, it was AJ Brown. Oh, that's not a great fit because, you know,
he played the slot in college. Outside. He played the slot.
And I'm like, oh, no, that's the best fit we had here. I don't know. All I know is that you and I've been on the same page with a lot of that stuff over the years, looking at these guys. And sometimes what people think are the worst fits are often the best. And often it is when you have two good guys when you want to have three good receivers. If you have a quarterback who can support three receivers, you have one of the best passing games in the league.
Yeah.
And I think Geno Smith showed that he's capable of doing that. He just needed that third receiver.
And it might be the most, I think, complimentary like wide receiver trio in the NFL right now. Obviously the Bengals have a great group. I'm not saying it's the best trio in the NFL, but like you have DK Metcalf, who's a pure like X receiver, who I think runs routes better than people give him credit for, but he's like a press man coverage beater. You have Tyler Lockett, who can win at all three levels as a flanker, pre-snap motion guy. And then you have JSN, who, like you mentioned, even when he gets single man coverage as a slot receiver, out routes, dig routes, he is going to like take those guys to the woodshed. So I love the trio here. I think he's a great candidate for best fit. We've got one spot open at three, and I'll also let you, if you want to bump Reed and Downs out of five and put somebody else in, hit me with two more guys to complete this list here.
All right, let's bump Downs out a little bit just because I'm willing to be wrong on him. And so we'll bump it out and we can get some receipts on that. And I'm going to put Charlie Jones in there instead.
Oh, I do think this one is really. So he's at five. Charlie Jones. We just mentioned the Bengals and I like this one. I've hinted at like what I like about Charlie Jones a little bit on the pod, but I don't think I've really talked about it. So let the people know.
Yeah. Well, listen, Tyler Boyd's contract ends next year. So Jones, he already has the route potential to become a productive slot option. He works well in the middle of the field. He's tough. And he obviously has explosion. He has more speed than Boyd, you know. So you get a crafty slot receiver with speed who's going to work in that offense. And look, I know that Irv Smith has always been the player that was promised to the fantasy brethren out there, and it just hasn't happened. And though maybe that could happen this year in Cincinnati, you know, based on track records, I'm more inclined to bet on the new thing in Jones, as who's the overachiever with speed, than Smith, who has strong talent but has underachieved for various reasons. So for me, Jones is the guy that he's a good pass catcher on routes that are anticipation routes, working over the middle. And when you can do that, I mean, Aiden O'Connell wasn't the greatest quarterback in the world, but he's willing to throw those anticipation routes where he's got tight trail coverage with a safety over top, and he's going to get hit one of two ways, if not both, and earn that ball. That's great stuff. And he can win some outside. So you can mix and match with him, because Ja'Marr Chase, as we know, I think he's the best receiver in the young receiver in the league, if not the best overall. Yeah. And he can play all three positions. And so when you have a guy like Jones, you just create more versatility to mix and match against defenses and create problems.
I love that. And yeah, I think he could be the starting slot receiver as early as next year with the Tyler Boyd thing. And Charlie Jones is a really interesting player, because he had such a wild college journey, and that typically is a turnoff for like a lot of folks in the dynasty community. But I do think he gives you that zone beating skill that you really want. So I like this one a lot as like a potential down the line one. So we got one more to hit here at wide receiver. Who's our number three player in terms of fit?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that, you know, overall, if I'm going to look at someone who probably fits that, I'm just gonna go ahead and say it's a tight race between Zay Flowers and Marvin Mims. I'm gonna roll with Marvin Mims as much as
okay.
I, even though I have Flowers ranked above him. Flowers is my number two receiver post draft. I'll just put it that way. But to me, that's same. Obvious. Pre-endos. It's just kind of to me, it's obvious that he's gonna get a lot of opportunities. But Mims to me, and I'm gonna age myself a little bit and say that he reminds me of Derek Mason. So a lot of you may not remember Derek Mason, who had a 15-year career and had a very slow start in his career. Like his first 4 to 5 years weren't noteworthy. And then he became basically a fantasy stalwart who could deliver at all three positions and go deep for you, win after the catch, return punts, and give you 1,000-yard receiving years and you know, 80 catch seasons. And he's that type of player who can play outside. I don't think the Broncos are. I think Sean McVay would like to see the Cortland Sutton and or Jerry Jeudy era end.
Yeah, I think Peyton, especially like Cortland Sutton. I mean, you know, they picked up the 5th-year option on Jerry Jeudy, but dude, Sutton just hasn't. He has not looked the same that post that injury. Like his last 2 years in RP have not been great. I don't know. I think that one, especially because he was already kind of a limited application player anyways. He's only an X receiver and he can only win on a handful of routes. He's mostly a downfield contested guy. Like my guess would be that Sutton is the one. There's questions about all three of the Broncos receivers, you know, even Tim Patrick as well. So like, I think Mims is going to end up playing a big role, maybe not a big like production role early, but I think from like a, They needed somebody, I think, like this that can that's kind of like a John Brown, T.Y. Hilton type of prospect.
Yeah. In 3 years, I think Marvin Mims is going to be a top 24 receiver in fantasy that we're going to be leaning on.
Love it.
You know, and I know that people are down on Russell Wilson. And yes, he had a bad season last year. It was worse as the season went on than it was early on when he just got banged for being phony and for the lunch table crowd that just kind of like went after him because they didn't like his personality. But, you know, I'm not a game show host. I'm a football analyst. And when I study his tape, there was a lot that was wrong with that Denver offense. Yeah. And Wilson certainly had his share of things. But if there's a guy, when I first studied Russell Wilson, you know, I worked at Football Outsiders back in the day, and my first ever article in their futures franchise that I began there was called Studying the Asterisk, because their Lewin quarterback rating had Russell Wilson off the charts over Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin. And I had Russell Wilson pretty high, and I showed how if he got to sit behind Drew Brees and work with Sean Payton's system, and how Payton helped Brees create passing lanes with his drops and with the way the offense ran, that how good he could become. Well, he didn't wind up there, but now he's with Sean Payton. So if there's a chance for a guy to rebound, and if you think Russell Wilson's just going to be like, I've made it and I'm just acting the way people are saying, you don't know. Russell Wilson is a killer. He may be that aw shucks, gee, phony kind of guy, but he's Michael Corleone in that sense. You go back and watch The Godfathers, and that's what Michael Corleone wanted to be, was the aw shucks. I might as well just be an accountant, kind of a kind of a corny dad kind of dude, but he was a stone cold killer. I think we're going to see more of that this year with Russell Wilson, and Marvin Mims is going to be a big part of it in the next 2 to 3 years.
Fits well with Russell Wilson if he can get back to his form. I do like that. All right, so tight ends here. We've got three spots for tight ends, so I'm going to kind of let you take the wheel on this one, even if you want to just drop me your 1, 2, 3, and we can pick up on each one of them. But yeah, hit me with your 1, 2, 3, since we've gone a little long on this podcast.
Yeah, shock. Yeah,
I don't know. Who could have seen that coming?
Right. So listen, Dalton Kincaid is number one by far to me. I think he's the best tight end in this class. I think that he can give you what people were hoping Kyle Pitts might give you with his production that hasn't quite happened yet. I think he could have a Kyle Pitts type of rookie year with the way that he goes up and wins the ball. And they're going to ask Dawson Knox to be more the blocker. Dalton Kincaid's going to take some pressure off of what they like to try to do with Gabriel Davis, but Davis needs to be schemed up to win a lot of times.
Yes.
And so Kincaid can be a matchup issue right off the bat. I think he could be one of the exceptional tight ends that give you fantasy production this year. Sam Laporta is number two on my board. He was number two on my board post-draft and number three on my board pre-draft. And Laporta, listen, I mean, great after the catch. I mean, he's a good mover after the catch. He gives you kind of the Mark Andrews-like skills in the middle of the field to find openings in zone, but he can also win one-on-one on the outside and run crisp routes on the outside and win that way. So for me, I'm looking at a player who may not be the big play George Kittle, Kincaid type, but he gives you enough underneath where it creates dilemmas for teams to say, are we really going to just focus on Amon-Ra St. Brown here?
Yeah.
Because if we do, Laporte is going to eat us alive. So there's that. And then I'm going to go a little bit deeper because nobody's drafting this guy, and I just don't get it. And it cracks me up. Is Elijah Higgins, the former wide receiver out of Stanford, who is, 6'2", 6'3", I think maybe actually taller than that. He was 225 when he came to the Senior Bowl. And then they said, we want to try you at tight end. And then when he got to the combine, he had already gained 10 pounds for the combine at 235. So are you telling me, and they drafted him as a tight end. Durham Smythe is a fun football player if you just like watching football, but he's not a starting tight end. Mike Gesicki does not fit Mike McDaniel's offense. Didn't fit that as the type of move. He was a good athlete in testing, but not really a graceful mover outside of his own frame. Elijah Higgins can be that possible grow into a Darren Waller type role in Miami's offense, and no one's drafting him. I watched 13 drafts that I studied, and there were two drafts where he was selected immediately post draft and at the end of drafts. And in a league, if you're 1.5 PPR or 1 PPR and tight ends have an emphasis, he's almost free money in leagues to just sit on, especially in dynasty formats, because he is a competent receiver who can make people miss in the open field, and he's going to get matched up with linebackers and safeties. And he's a guy that you might look at him and say, well, if you asked him to play outside and get matched up against cornerbacks, he's not high on your list and when you're studying him as a receiver. But you're asking him to get matched up against bigger dudes? Yeah, forget about that. This is a matchup worth taking a risk on.
Yeah, and like speed and mismatch ability is key and crucial in this Miami Dolphins offense. For Higgins, I think with Mike Gesicki, it's a little bit misunderstood that not really as much of like a matchup guy because he's not great going, you know, going out to the sideline, stuff like that. He's not a yak player at all. He's like a vertical up the seam stiff tight end who's a mismatch because of his size, but not always because of his athleticism. I think it'd be a good fit for maybe New England and generally like other offenses. It's just not in this particular offense. So for Elijah Higgins, like they have a wide open pretty much depth chart at the tight end position. If he can get into that mix, it'd be really interesting. And I love what you said about Kincaid, man, because it's just like he is right. Like take positional labels off it. And I'm always hesitant to do this because then people want me to chart tight ends and I'm not going to chart tight ends. But he is like from a pure, just talking about pass catcher standpoint, he's the second best guy already on the roster outside of Stephon Diggs. And I think he can make that big impact there for sure. And look, with Sam Laporta, yak, baby. Like, what do? You help Jared Goff? You get him guys that he can get the ball to quickly on that like first read, second read, and you get him guys that can make plays after the catch. I love your 1-2-3 here, especially Higgins, who I don't think has not been mentioned on this podcast so far.
Yeah, I mean, I laugh because when you talk about Gesicki, no offense to Mike because he's a skilled player. But, you know, if we were going to compare him to the animal kingdom, I'm sure ostriches are fast, but you definitely don't think of them as like cornering and making tight turns. You know, you'd be thinking of like some of the big game cats or something like that, or an ibis or something like that, that can make those sharp turns. He's not that kind of guy. And Higgins is more of the kind of guy that will fit the type of routes that they would want to run in Miami and exploit him.
All right, quarterbacks. You mentioned you've got three that you really like. I'm guessing Will Levis is the one who's not in the mix here. I'm not because I've read the RSP. But so Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson. I'll be honest, Waldman. I like all three of these landing spots for these guys, especially two of them. So I'm interested to see if we agree on the who might be number three here. But give me your number one in terms of these guys with the offense that they landed on, where they fit, who is the best fit among these rookie quarterbacks?
Look, I thought Anthony Richardson was the best prospect in this draft class, with Bijan Robinson maybe slightly behind that. Maybe 1-2, depending on how you want to look at it. And he's number two on my post-draft board right now. And that's only if you don't play in a league where you really need to value a quarterback.
Right.
But Richardson in that offense, where you've got a flexible offensive coordinator who's worked with Jalen Hurts, who was more of a good, who had talent as a passer, but made some immature decisions and maybe needed some mechanical work with certain types of concepts, you know, and techniques, and just more reps, maybe with pro style defenses that he would face. Well, Anthony Richardson isn't. You know, I've heard your buddy Josh Norris talk about this, because it's something I've also echoed alongside that, is that it's not that Anthony Richardson is raw. He's inexperienced.
Yeah.
You know, and so he is very good at manipulating coverage in the pocket, in tight pocket scenarios, and doing it efficiently and throwing with placement. The problem is sometimes identifying the defense correctly, because he just hasn't seen all the variations that can get thrown at a guy over the course of 2 to 3 years, and then recognize him. He started 1 year. So you're not going to make some dumb throws, because you it's like going to a foreign country and getting tricked by the local con artist or sales vendor on something. Yeah. And you may have seen that in Miami Gardens, but you may not have seen it in Thailand, how they do it there. But you also may be Anthony Richardson and be, you know, swift enough to pick up the language fast enough that you actually can like listen and hear at speed and with rhythm and hear emotion and convey emotion, that you're ending up befriending that con artist, and he shows you all the hacks for basically how to work around Thailand and get stuff for free and get best deals. Richardson's that kind of player who's going to grow into that. He may not be great this year, but there's going to be people who are going to say, see, I told you he's awful.
Yeah, totally.
But just buy into that. The more they tell you he's awful, the more you want to buy shares of this guy, because at the end of the day, in like 2-3 years, he's going to be one of the top 3 to 5 quarterbacks in this league.
I love the fit, and I've said this a lot. I think that wide receiver trio, like I alluded to earlier, is really underrated. I think Pittman can take another step and be like a – I already think he's kind of there. He's just – like he's shown he can excel with two different kind of quarterbacks. Like Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, two drastically different guys, and now you're about to go like to the
– Ben Roethlisberger, Josh Allen-esque with a touch of, you know – with a touch of basically Jalen Hurts or Steve McNair, you know, someone who can run. So yeah, you get
right. And it's like, yeah, you've already seen him throw or play with like a wild deep pass quarterback like Carson Wentz and like go downfield and like get the thing. But, and I think people forget about that when they just remember him being like an over the middle crossing guy with damn last year's version of Matt Ryan. So like,
yeah,
I think, and by the way, that's going to be great for Anthony Richardson. Like, we've said with Charles McDonald on the podcast, we don't want to bang on, you know, college kids, but some of those receivers at Florida are not running routes like Michael Pittman over the middle of the field. So yeah, I like that. Pierce, I think, is a fun fit with him. Downs, I think, will give him a guy who gives him a ton of separation as a slot receiver. And one of these freak big tight ends, Jelani Woods, Mo'Ali Cox, has to be good at some point in Indianapolis. So I agree with you. Clear number one fit with me, Anthony Richardson as well. Who's your number two between CJ Stroud and Bryce Young?
Bryce Young, because I like the offensive line where it's going. I like Adam Thielen as a receiver that he can lean on to really learn about NFL defenses in terms of the hybrid defenses that are out there and the disguises. He's going to have someone to work with in that realm. DJ Chark, look, I like what DJ Chark can do for you in the role that they put him in when he's healthy. And I think that Chark has an opportunity there. You add Mingo to that mix, and that's helpful. So, you know, you combine that with the line and establish with a running game that I think should get a little better with Miles Sanders. I've never been a huge Miles Sanders guy, but I think that there's something to work with there compared to what they had. And you're off and running. And because the best thing with Young is that he can play in the pocket and play within himself there. He's like Kyler Murray without the desire to like drop his head, hold the ball 3 yards out behind him and like try and scramble for 8 seconds, which looks great on ESPN for, you know, once every 3 months. But you're still down by 19 when you make the big play that makes ESPN after you've done that, because you're not making the simple plays. You're not turning the difficult looking situations into simple solutions. That's what the great quarterbacks do. Bryce Young is a guy who has the potential to be able to do that. He can be creative and dynamic. He can also be efficient. And you're going to see that early in his career.
I love it. I think I kind of, and I'm going to leave Bryce Young there because I don't hate the fit at all. And I think like the fact he's got the good offensive line, the running game, I think the defense, can't discount that enough. Like he's going to be in like positive situations more often than probably either of these other two guys in Anthony Richardson or CJ Stroud. But I do think the Texans fit with CJ Stroud is not as bad as I think many people think, just because they've got two good tackles in Howard and Laremy Tunsil. They've got a first round pick from last year at guard. I think they drafted a center this year. Like this line is pretty good. The skill position talent's not great, but I don't think they're like an F anywhere. John Metchie or Tank Dell potentially being the slot receiver here, I think one of those guys could be really fun. So like, and also if you buy into that, like CJ Stroud, he's, you know, doesn't play great under pressure. Well, he's going to have a good offensive line. Well, he doesn't, you know, create. Well, he'll be put in advantageous situations on like boot action, cut the field in half type of situations that he will either not have to read out the whole field if you buy into the processing thing, which I don't really buy into the processing thing as a concern, or like he'll be in put in advantageous situations to scramble out of those moments. So I don't know. I would have been tempted to put CJ Stroud as my second fit here, but I can see why Bryce Young is better in this, in this situation.
But still, CJ Stroud to me is in my top tier for my post-draft. Like I rarely have three quarterbacks who I say, yeah, you should make a priority to draft at least one of these guys. And if you're one of those people that got multiple first round picks, you know, then, and you decide that you could get a Robinson or a Smith and Jigba or a Dalton Kincaid, depending on your league type, and wind up with CJ Stroud, I would be thrilled with that because for all the reasons you mentioned. And let's not forget my buddy Xavier Hutchinson in terms as an interesting guy. I don't think he's got a great fit because of all the receivers you mentioned, but I like that dude. I think he's an interesting guy. But Stroud to me is a He's not a slow processor at all, if you ask me. He just has certain areas where coverage playing over the top of the receiver, he can sometimes misgauge. And he's also one of those guys, when you look at the top players who create off structure, they'll often make some throws that seem kind of risky, but they have the confidence to pull the trigger with the anticipation to hit it downfield at the right time with coverage in a position where it's advantageous for the offense if you make the decisive play. And Stroud's kind of more of a Kirk Cousins type, who's a mature Kirk Cousins type, where Cousins is now, which is he rolls out and sees that and goes, maybe I'll take that check down. Maybe I'll take, maybe I'm not going to throw that deep crosser or deep post while rolling to my right with pressure behind me and throw it 40 yards. You know, maybe Matt Stafford will make that play. Maybe Jalen Hurts can make that play. You know, a lot of guys that people love, maybe Stroud never does that or doesn't do it as often. But again, he also finds, you know, he also finds simple solutions from difficult looking problems. And Tom Brady did that every day of every season, every game. And you saw how that wound up for him.
Well, on that note, Waldman, we've done it all. We said it all. I appreciate you doing this show with me. Tell the people where they can find you and all of your great work.
MountWaldmanRSP.com to find a lot of the stuff that I do, every week, podcasts, things like that. Mount Waldman's RSP cast, available at any podcast outlet that features scout talk with guys like Russ Landy, former NFL scout, Angelo FF, Brandon Angelo, who's a speed, track specialist, who also does a lot of great fantasy analysis. And of course, the RSP film room, where, long running work. I've done work with, guys, like I'm looking at across from me from the camera, to guys like Jamal Williams, looking at their tape together, stuff like that. And of course, mattwaldman.com, you can purchase the RSP pre-draft, post-draft, and the projections dynasty rankings. You can learn more about them there.
You can find him on Twitter at Matt Waldman as well. That's going to do it for us. This Thursday will be my last podcast from Los Angeles. So while I focus on my new beginning in a new place, we figured why not do the same with our next podcast. Andy Behrens joins the show to rank and highlight the best fresh starts and new beginnings for coaches and players this upcoming season. Tune into that for our next episode. Until then, we're out.